Inside Florida Politics, powered by Gatehouse Florida. Hello, I'm Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson, and I'm joined as always by Gatehouse Florida Capitol correspondent John Kennedy. Hey, John.
Hello, Zach.
Well, it's October, and the Florida legislature's regular 60-day legislative session is still 3 months from kicking off, but lawmakers were back in Tallahassee this week to deal with some controversial issues, including whether to reinstate Broward Sheriff Scott Israel and a parental notification abortion bill. We'll talk about the legislative action and some impeachment-related news out of Florida, but first, you all know what that music means. It's time for our regular pick a number segment. John, it's been a busy week for you in Tallahassee. Did you have time to scrounge up a number?
Zach, this week a number that figured big in Florida politics was 4, and that's what I've got.
All right, the number 4. And my number this week is 72. So write those numbers down, folks. That's a 4 for John Kennedy, a 72 for Zach Anderson, and we'll tell you what they mean for Florida politics at the end of the show. Well, the big news this week in Florida politics was the drama surrounding suspended Broward County Sheriff Scott Israel. We talked on last week's podcast about how this Senate trial of Israel was a major test of Governor Ron DeSantis's sway over GOP lawmakers in the legislature. DeSantis suspended Israel over his department's failures during the Parkland school shooting last year. If the Senate had reinstated Israel, it would have been a major setback for the governor. That did not happen, though. John, tell us about how this played out this week in the Senate.
Well, it was a grueling and emotional few days in the Senate before the chamber voted 25-15 to formally remove Israel as sheriff. Now he's already been out of office, suspended by Governor Ron DeSantis, as you mentioned, just 3 days after the governor was sworn in back in January. DeSantis was fulfilling a promise that he'd made during the campaign in the wake of calls from some of the families of children and school staff killed during last year's massacre at the school. But there was a lot of drama in advance of the vote. There was a 10-hour Senate Rules Committee hearing on Monday in which the special master, that's a hearing officer who had presided over a 2-day hearing in June, he presented his findings, with his recommendation being that DeSantis had failed to make his case against Israel, that there was not a preponderance of evidence presented, that Israel was guilty of dereliction of duty and incompetence. Those were the charges that the governor had leveled in suspending him. Democrats seized on that finding by the special master, and they argued that DeSantis was using politics, not following the Constitution, in reaching his conclusion that you had to oust an elected county official because of failings by his employees, essentially. The lawyer for DeSantis, they also kind of inflamed things even more, because he acknowledged to the Rules Committee that what senators faced was a political decision, not a legal or judicial one. And, amid all this, of course, were several members of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas families, the parents and relatives of victims, testifying before the Rules Committee, telling stories of the impact the loss of their children have had on their households, and how, the findings of the various analyses of that Valentine's Day shooting showed a host of failings by Broward deputies who failed to engage the shooter at the school, raising questions of, had they, would their children have survived? So those kind of the Senate sessions, like we went through this week with Israel, he's now the highest profile elected official removed since 2005 by the Senate. But politically, for DeSantis, he survived a real test of his strength here for a first year governor. And the Senate, in hindsight now, maybe becomes an even more compliant ally of DeSantis. Senators could have exerted more independence by rejecting DeSantis's ouster of Israel, but the tragedy of Parkland also makes it very difficult for many to stand for what the alternative was going to be, and that was reinstate Sheriff Israel. That was, however, the view of most Democrats in the chamber, and Republicans mostly stood by the governor. But you know, Israel isn't completely going away. He's filed papers to run for election next year, trying to get his old job back as sheriff. DeSantis has appointed the first black sheriff in Broward history to replace him. And that contest shapes up as, you know, a very divisive one next year for Broward County. So this year's, or I should say, this week's Senate action is certain to live on. You're going to see this in TV ads and mailers on both sides in next year's contest. And late after the vote, Israel's response to the Senate kind of feeds into this polarized political atmosphere. In a statement that he made a few hours after the vote, he basically addressed it to the people of Broward County, saying that your vote has been stolen and the results of our 2016 election have been overturned. So it's going to be a pretty heated contest going forward, even though for now it would seem that, you know, Israel is out of the picture, but he's going to reemerge very soon.
And John, you mentioned this was a 25 to 15 vote and mostly along party lines, but anybody who follows the Senate closely knows that there are 23 Republicans and 17 Democrats. So 25 people supported getting rid of Israel. There were some Democrats that ended up supporting getting rid of Israel, and at least and one Republican who opposed this, right? There was a little bit of bipartisanship here against Israel and for Israel. What was some of the explanation for the folks who broke with their party?
Well, the three Democrats that jumped over to join the Republicans, they seemed to be of a mind that, you know, Israel just could not come back, and that the failings of the Broward deputies, you know, eight of them were listed as, you know, not responding, that was right. More than just, you know, the action of one stray employee, so that it made a case for, you know, his removal. The only Republican that sided with the Democrats was Senator Tom Lee, Hillsborough County Republican, who often is a maverick in that chamber. He stood on the issue of the Constitution, saying that, you know, basically DeSantis had not made his case. This is a big step, at a precedent-setting step for the Senate when it comes to removal of a county official, and he did not think that this, you know, that DeSantis had made a strong enough case to warrant this kind of action by the Senate. So, you know, he stood on that principle, but he was the only one among the Republicans that felt that way.
All right. High drama in the Florida Senate this week. Well, as senators were deciding Scott Israel's fate over on the other side of the Capitol, the Florida House was teeing up a major culture war issue. A House committee passed a parental consent bill that requires girls under age 18 to get consent from a parent or guardian before they get an abortion. The House wants to revive this legislation, even though it was ruled unconstitutional by the Florida Supreme Court 30 years ago because of a privacy provision in the state constitution. John, you covered this abortion legislation this week. Why is the House pushing this when it's already been ruled unconstitutional?
Yeah, we've talked a few times on this podcast about the new look Florida Supreme Court, which Governor DeSantis changed dramatically in January when he added three conservative new justices to the seven-member court. Well, the court is the reason that this parental consent legislation has real momentum this year. An earlier version of the court, then dominated by appointees of Democratic governors, indeed threw out a parental consent law in 1989, saying it violated the state's constitutional right to privacy. Well, anti-abortion advocates now are banking on this new court taking a narrower view of that privacy right, and think that, you know, they may eventually uphold the parental consent law once it clears the legislature, and then is challenged undoubtedly by abortion rights advocates. You know, first things first, though, the bill has to get through the legislature, but it looks like it's on a fast track, with the conservative House scheduling only this one committee hearing that took place this week on the bill, and it cleared that hurdle. So it's just about ready for the House floor in the opening days of the legislative session, if that happens. It's the bill would require girls under age 18 seeking abortions to get notarized consent from their parents, legal guardian, or go to a judge and try to get a waiver. Florida already has a parental notice law that was approved by voters in 2004, but anti-abortion groups say that that's not enough. They want to give parents what one advocate told me was, quote, leverage over the rights of their children. And that's where parental consent comes in. Meanwhile, the often more moderate Florida Senate, which is still controlled by Republicans, just like the House, it's looking likely this year to take up the parental consent bill. It has three committee hearings to get through in the Senate, but the Health Policy Committee, which is chaired by a sponsor of the parental consent bill, is the first stop, and that's a sign it's going to pass there. And, with an election year coming up and so many states this year approving more abortion restrictions, there are nine of them that have passed laws that they hope will eventually get before the U.S. Supreme Court, which of course now includes two new appointees of President Trump, that the whole goal seems to be aimed at trying to challenge the historic Roe versus Wade ruling that cleared the way for abortions in this country. Now here in Florida, parental consent would be a new restriction, but it's not quite as dramatic as fetal heartbeat bills that some other states have passed. But parental consent is going to draw crowds to the Capitol, that's for sure.
You think, though, it might be a little bit more politically easier to sell politically than some of the more highly restrictive abortion bills that have passed in other states that almost completely outlaw abortions?
Yeah, I think it would. Polls would seem to indicate that parental consent is something that, many voters can understand, or relate to. It may not seem as alarming, though I think abortion advocates do see this as, a dramatic change that really impacts the rights of Floridians and young women under the age of 18 for sure.
This is going to debate.
This is going to be one that draws giant crowds to the Capitol, I think, at every stop during this session, because it'll be symbolic of a much larger assault on abortion as abortion rights people see it.
What's really interesting, I don't think a lot of people realize that there's sort of a higher bar for abortion restrictions in Florida, because not only do you have this U.S. Supreme Court decision, the Roe v. Wade decision, that has limited the ability to restrict abortions historically, but you have a provision in the state constitution in Florida that protects a right to privacy, and that historically has been interpreted by the state Supreme Court to protect the right to an abortion. But as John pointed out, we have a different state Supreme Court now that is more conservative. It has some justices that were appointed by the new governor, Ron DeSantis, and this will be potentially a huge test case for that court. Well, switching gears a little bit, we're going to move from the Florida legislature to the fight in Washington, D.C. over impeachment. There was some pretty interesting news this week when a Florida Republican member of Congress, Francis Rooney of Naples, came out and said that he's open to considering impeachment, and he voiced grave concerns about some of the facts surrounding President Donald Trump's dealings with Ukraine and the allegations that he was pressuring Ukraine to investigate a political rival. Rooney said, quote, "I want to get the facts and do the right thing, because I'll be looking at my children a lot longer than I'm looking to anybody in this building." That's what he told reporters during an interview in the Capitol recently. John, what do you make of Rooney speaking out like this? We haven't seen a lot of Republicans break ranks with the president. In fact, Rooney is the first Republican member of the House to say that he's not ruling out impeachment.
Yeah, you're right. You know, he's a two-term member of Congress, a former George W. Bush era diplomat and a businessman, pretty establishment Republican, but he had been an early critic of the FBI and Justice Department roles in investigating Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election. So, on one hand, initially, he looked like somebody who was going to be a Trump ally forever, but that changed. And he, you know, made news recently by this skepticism that he has now of President Trump's July call with the Ukrainian president. And he says he wants more information to emerge from the House Democrats' impeachment inquiry that surrounds the issue. But, equally stunning, though, Rooney announced that he's not going to be seeking re-election next year. Right. So he's joining a long line of Republican lawmakers who announced their retirement. But he could still make noise, though, until that time. And while that impeachment inquiry unfolds, you got to wonder how outspoken he will be.
Yeah, it's really interesting that right after he said that he's open to impeachment, he announced his retirement. And it does seem like, maybe that he says that there's no connection there. But it's a very interesting coincidence. You know, there's not a lot of lawmakers who aren't retiring who are willing to speak against the president, because there's so much support for the president within the GOP base. Rooney's a kind of an interesting Republican. He's been very, very outspoken on climate change and saying that the GOP needs to get serious about addressing climate change. He's been very outspoken about other environmental issues that have really devastated his district in Southwest Florida, the blue-green algae and the red tide algae. And he's kind of an old school, as you mentioned, John, establishment type Republican. He served as a ambassador to the Vatican under George W. Bush. He's somebody who spent his life in business and was very successful in business and has come to public service later in life. So he seems to be somebody who, you know, is sort of like, this isn't a political career for him. And, I thought it was really interesting that he said he just wants to call it like he sees it and get to the facts. And kind of an illuminating quote that he's more concerned about what his children think about him than what the president or anybody in Congress thinks about him, kind of alluding to the idea that, people will be judged by what they do right now, and that, this is a historical decision. And it sounds like he has grave concerns about some of the actions of the president. Well, one reason more Republican leaders aren't speaking out against impeachment is the fact that their base largely sides with Trump and views the impeachment push with great skepticism. That was reinforced by a Florida poll this week that found voters in the Sunshine State almost evenly split on impeachment. More than 80% of Democrats support the impeachment inquiry, according to the University of North Florida poll, but only 13% of Republicans are in favor. So I think it's unlikely that we'll see a stampede of Republicans agreeing with Francis Rooney when the vast majority of the GOP base still opposes impeachment, including here in Florida. But you never know. The testimony in D.C. from Trump administration officials who have inside knowledge of the Ukraine dealings seems to get more damning by the day. The polling has shown a gradual uptick in support for impeachment, including here in Florida. And we'll have to wait and see if these ongoing revelations become too troubling for GOP leaders to ignore, as seems to be the case for at least one Republican member of Congress here in Florida. Lastly, it's time for our pick a number segment on the podcast. John, you went with a nice simple 4. You want to explain what that means?
I did. Well, we've already alluded to this, but 4 is the number of state senators who broke ranks with their fellow party members in the vote on whether to remove Scott Israel as Broward County Sheriff. Democrats voted against Israel's removal, except for 3, one from St. Petersburg, another from Orlando, and one from Miami. They joined with Republicans who were backing Governor DeSantis's ouster of Israel, except for 1. And that Republican, as we mentioned, was Senator Tom Lee from Hillsborough County. He's, you know, one of Senate President Bill Galvano's top lieutenants and a former Senate president himself, who said he didn't like the way the entire process turned out. He thought it should have been more akin to a legal proceeding, with Israel given more of an opportunity to challenge some of the claims that were put forth by DeSantis's attorneys and pushing for his ouster, and to challenge any material that was beyond what the Senate's hearing officer, you know, had reviewed in recommending that Israel be reinstated. You know, Lee basically said the governor had made it all about politics and, you know, meeting his promise to the Parkland families who had been calling to get rid of Israel. In this case, Lee was ready to overturn the Republican governor's order, which would have been a real blow to DeSantis's political influence, at least with the Senate. But in the end, Lee didn't prevail, or he didn't convince any other Republicans to join him in defying the governor's wishes. But, you know, you got to wonder, in the Lee household, it could still be awkward. The senator's wife, Laurel Lee, is the state's Secretary of State. And, yep, she's an appointee of Governor DeSantis. So that's going to make for some, you know, some interesting table talk in the Lee home.
Yeah. Yeah. And you have to think that Tom Lee probably helped her get that appointment. So,
yeah, you're right. It could be a little awkward there.
Well, my number is 72, as in 72% of Florida voters approve of the job Governor Ron DeSantis is doing, according to another University of North Florida poll that was released just today. And that's really an incredible number, 72% approval rating. You don't see that for a lot of politicians. It's more than 20 percentage points higher than the job approval rating for Florida's two Republican senator, U.S. senators, Marco Rubio and Rick Scott, who are at 48% approval and 49% approval, respectively. Remarkably, 56% of Democrats say they approve of the job Governor Ron DeSantis is doing. And it just goes to show that DeSantis has been very effective in presenting a bipartisan image in the early days of his administration, whether it's legalizing smokable medical marijuana, focusing on environmental protection, or pledging to give first-year teachers a big pay raise. And DeSantis scored another victory this week when the Florida Senate confirmed his removal of Sheriff Scott Israel. So the governor is definitely on a roll. But he hasn't been completely free from controversy. He encountered some turbulence recently when it came out that a pair of Soviet-born businessmen who were arrested on campaign finance charges and who are close to Rudy Giuliani and helped Giuliani dig up dirt on the Biden family in Ukraine have supported the governor's campaign financially. DeSantis played down his relationship with the two men. So far, the governor has been able to deftly handle any challenge that comes his way, but we'll have to wait and see if this becomes more of a liability for him. He was still talking about it this week and trying to explain it. So that is a story that's not going away and could ding his approval rating a little bit going forward. Well, that wraps up another episode of Inside Florida Politics. I want to thank our audio production team of Thomas Cordy, Joseph Forzano, and Adam Fish. And thanks to all of you for listening. We're out of here.